Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, in the first half, I give a very important discussion or dissertation on calibrating oneself. And we talked to a legendary writer, comedian, Alan Zweibel. First, blinds galore. Blindsgalore.com. Over 2 million windows covered and counting. Blindsgalore.com does one thing. They do it better than anyone else. 100% custom window treatments built to your exact measurements. Blinds, shades, shutters, drapes, even blinds that connect to your smart home or Amazon Alexa device. Blinds Galore has it all. I have them at home. We have them in the studio. I have the electronic ones at home. You don't have to run wires to them, and you don't need a transformer or Lovo or any of that. They just charge up like a cell phone. New Build a Blind tool lets you create and customize your window treatments, and you can do it online. See how the blinds look before you buy. And from start to finish, measuring, picking out, and installing, their experts help you every step of the way. It's blinds galore, right, Dawson?
Whether you need more privacy to sleep in, to cool down, or just fix up a room, blindsgalore.com has just what you're looking for. Check them out and let them know Adam sent you. That's blindsgalore.com.
Support for the Adam Carolla podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Imagine how it feels to have an award-winning team by your side through every step of the mortgage process. That's exactly what you get with Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage does more to help you understand the home buying process so you can get exactly what you need. They've helped millions of Americans achieve their dream of home ownership. When you're ready to purchase your home, and the home of your dreams, they can help you as well. J.D. Power has ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 6 years in a row. When you work with them, you get more than just a loan because Rocket Mortgage is more than just a lender. Right, Dawson?
Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. For J.D. Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, legendary comedy writer Alan Zweibel, calls in. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, and Dave Damashek is here for good sports. And now, he still smells like bourbon. Then again, he always smells like bourbon. Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but get on a mandate. You get it on. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for sharing. We love that about you, right, Gina Grad?
That's right.
And Bald Brian, I'm a powerful douche. Alan Zweibel, legendary writer, wrote for SNL for many years, from 75 to 80, wrote for the Samurai John Belushi sketch in the news recently because of people talking about their latest firing and how you could never do. It is interesting in the world of comedy. It's like, you couldn't do that anymore. There's a lot of that, which is weird. It comes up with me a lot because people go, couldn't do the man show anymore. And you go, special ed. You couldn't do special ed. And it's like, it made a lot of people laugh. I don't know why everything's on a no-fly zone.
It's harmful.
Yeah, it's harmful.
He was there. I'm doing the math. Alan Zweibel in 75 because Chevy Chase was in a sketch with Richard Pryor where the N-word was prominently featured. It was the punchline of the sketch. And that, speaking of sketches, you can't do anymore.
On national network TV.
It was the punchline of the bit.
I bet that's easy to find now.
We'll talk to you about it. I'm curious because I love old SNL, but it was Chevy Chase was interviewing him for a job, right? Or something, whatever.
Yes.
And he's like, we have some word association here. And he just starts saying racial stuff like porch monkey or whatever. And like Richard Pryor kept getting more agitated and finally dropped the N-bomb. And he goes, dead honky. That was the joke. And that was the big, that was the closer.
That was a big bit.
Yeah,
from
it was
that
popular.
All right. Well, speaking of that hurtful things people say, I've always said, I was thinking about this the other day when I was talking to Dr. Drew. I want to thank Rocket Mortgage and Blinds Galore and Zip Recruiter and Castrol for sponsoring the show. I would say to Dr. Drew, years and years and years ago when we would do Loveline, people would say, they would call in, they would say, oh, I'm thinking about quitting my job and there's a new opportunity, but I'm just not so, I'm not sure because I'll lose my dental insurance. And or they would say, I've had a girlfriend of 3 years, but it doesn't feel right. And she wants to get engaged, but I don't know if I should do it. It just doesn't feel right. And I would constantly say to everyone, you have to calibrate yourself. Mm. You must calibrate yourself. People aren't going to be able to tell you definitively whether it's a good idea to quit your job and start your own business or drop Becky Ann and move on with whomever or whatever, or when the right time, you know, you want to drop out of college, you want to travel, or you know, all the decisions in life. Who are we and who am I to tell you? I don't know her. I don't know you. Right. I bet if I spent some time with the two of you, I might be able to figure this one out. I do kind of tell people, look, if you're asking the question of do I quit my job, I'm thinking about quitting my job, and if I want out of this 3-year mm-hmm. relationship, you have 1 foot out the whore. But
easy
now. But I constantly used to say back then, calibrate. Mm-hmm. You have to calibrate yourself, and then when you think it would be a good idea to quit your job, it's because you think it's a good idea to quit your job. And people would say often, I've had it happen to me along the way. I'm like, why would you do that? Or were you leaving money on the table? Or aren't you taking a risk? And I would go, I don't know. And then they go like, well, why are you doing it? And I would say, because I want to do it and I'm calibrated. Right. So if I want to do something, then I'll do it. And it usually works out. But I'm not basing it on a inflated version of myself mm-hmm. or a downgraded version of myself or a lucky version of myself or nothing ever works out.
Just the most likely scenario.
For me, based on what my strengths are and shortcomings are as well. It's all factored in.
And you know what people who aren't calibrated say to you? Ooh, must be nice to just be able to drop everything because it's scary and they're resentful.
Right. So I think it's worthwhile for everybody to try to get themselves tuned up and tuned into themselves. Now, that doesn't mean think you're great, and that doesn't mean bursting at the seam with confidence. Mm. That just means a realistic depiction of yourself within your own mind. Yep. And
if you're great at something, know it. But if you're not great at it, know that too.
Yeah. And then also kind of, when you're dealing with people and someone is saying you're being unfair, are you being unfair? Are they accusing you of being unfair? Like, be able to be tuned in, you know, get that radar detector, that radar dish facing north or wherever it goes, or your compass true north, and really on a daily basis kind of recalibrate, like constantly recalibrate, because people are going to say, you, and then fill in the blank. You're not being fair, or you're being a bad this, or you're being that's, or you're wrong, or your feelings are correct, or you should stay here forever and never leave this thing. And I was thinking about it as it, you know, we always kind of talk about social media and ignore social media. We're going to have to teach our kids not to engage or to ignore when people are saying negative things. To ignore those, to tune out, block out those negative things. It's not really, first off, it's impossible. You can't just block out negative things. Mm-hmm. You read about yourself. If you're driving down the street and somebody throws you the bird and calls you a fat ass, you know, I shun you. I shun you in your hand.
That's today's version of no fear. It's impossible. You're going to have some fear.
You're gonna see things. You're going to read things. And if you read enough negative comments that suggest that you have this tendency that's negative, or that you're not this or too much of that or whatever it is, if you read a bunch of comments online commenting that you've put some weight on, instead of tuning out the negativity, you should step on a scale and kind of go, well, maybe I have put some weight on.
You don't have to look at me. I am aware that I put some weight
that
on.
No, I don't notice that. I don't see form or color.
Or shape.
Or shape.
Or silhouette.
So if you have maybe Now, you don't have to think of yourself as a bad person. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time to start hitting the Vinny diet or the gym or whatever it is. It doesn't have. So what I'm saying is we talk about blocking. Block out. Don't listen. Those are haters. They oftentimes are haters. Sometimes haters have a point. Sometimes they're haters, right. just haters. And I've kind of realized that everybody needs to start getting a realistic sense of themselves and then applying that to whatever the crazy societal, especially computer age, social media world we're living in, you're going to have to start using it. That shall be your only weapon. And look no further than doing something like the Comedy Central roast. If you do the Comedy Central roast, there'll be plenty of people and they'll have plenty of opinions. And
so you are dating Jimmy?
And those,
so you do hate women?
Those opinions will be, you know, someone will say, oh, I loved Adam's speech at the end telling all those woke people to shut up or whatever. And you go, okay, thank you. That's nice. And then someone will go like, you know, so-and-so was funny and Nikki Glaser's funny, Jeff, but Adam Carolla sucked. You know, he was by far the worst. And then you'll think, all right, well, now, if I keep reading those and I'm not calibrated, then I may buy into this. Mm-hmm. Or I should definitely look at it and give it some thought. First things first. Like, you know, if I just woke up the next morning and started reading these things with no memory of the actual event, I'd think to myself, Jesus Christ, you went up there and laid an egg. But I was there, and the audience was laughing, and Baldwin was laughing. So
David was laughing.
I have to think to myself, okay, is this an accurate depiction of... Now, what I'm doing is I'm calibrated, so I'm needing to use my calibration. I cannot use their words. Right. On the other hand, some of the things they're saying may be correct, or there may be morsels of truth in there. And I just realize I can look at stuff and go, I'll cop to that. Like, yeah, that's a point. And then other things where, especially when you get into hyperbole, where you go, by far the worst of the night or whatever it is, you go, that's someone's angry at something else. Right. And by the way, they should calibrate themselves as well. Because then they could see more, they could see things more clearly. Yeah. And then also, as we always talk about, when you get into deep hyperbole, people tend to tune out, which is ends up happening. But I just thought, in today's day and age, when everyone's just online saying this guy's the worst, or this girl's the worst, or this person's Hitlerian, or white supremacist, or whatever it may be, or the least funny person on the planet, or the dumbest person on the planet, or whatever the negativity is, everybody's going to have to calibrate. You know, they're going to, again, when I read the tweet, like, oh, I feel sorry for Adam's wife and Adam's daughter, you know, I have to calibrate. I have to go, are you a good dad? Mm-hmm. Are you a good husband? Do you provide? Are you cruel to females or your wife or your daughter? Like, what is it? I'll give it some thought. I'll entertain this notion. Let's not go too far the other way. Like, hey, I'm the best dad and father in the world. You know, I never claimed that.
Are you kidding me?
So everybody, let's get into a realistic self-calibration, because that is going to be your only weapon out there in this virtual world.
Good point.
Especially when versions of what went on or versions of interactions or what people accuse you of. Wait till that stuff starts coming around or you start reading things about yourself or whatever. You're just going to have to be all calibrated.
I had a micro version of this last night. My own calibration. So I had my comedy class last night, right? And we're getting towards the end. Now we're starting to assemble our best jokes and starting to make a set and stuff like that. And it was my worst night of class. I bombed. I was terrible. I picked the wrong jokes. The jokes I picked didn't even land. It was a disaster. And I know I'm calibrated because I went up in front of Joe Coy and I did okay. The audience laughed. They were polite and it was fine. I know what I can do at this point.
It's not a constant catastrophe.
No, this was a catastrophe.
Yeah.
This was it was bad. And it calibrated. It's the photo negative what you're talking about, where people are talking shit about you and you're like, well, no, I know I did okay. My classmates who give us feedback were being nice. nice, and they were like, "Oh, this kind of worked," and you know, but I could tell it was like, "No, they're stretching. They're really reaching.
Right.
This is not. Thank you for being polite, but this is not a good night."
It doesn't destroy your sense of self
no,
to be able to see that.
Makes me want to work a lot harder because I'm hosting this thing on Saturday. But it was not a good night.
Yeah, and there's going to be bad nights, and part of that is in an attempt to grow, you want to do different new material that you're less familiar with and maybe a little outside of the comfort zone. And yes, you're exactly right. There are other people. There is a calibration, man, where people say, first off, don't listen to what people say. Look for what they do. You know, the second date. Where's the second date? Are you having the second date? But that thing, what, you know, when the employer goes, "Yo, look, we love you, we're all big fans, everyone's a big fan, we're just going a different direction away from you," it's like, okay, listen to what they're saying. And now they're saying you're great, everyone's a big fan, we're all big fans. Why are you going a different direction from the guy you're a big fan of? Yeah. That guy's being nice. Mm-hmm. There's so many, I can't tell you, especially in the artist world, like how many, this guy says I should record my records and stuff like that. Well, but he has a recording company. Yeah, his is boutique. He has too many artists that are already like me, but he says I would definitely should be recorded and yeah. I should find someone who's a better fit because he thinks I'm the next right. Kenny Loggins. And then they buy it. But you realize as you're hearing, it's like the person's telling them no.
Yeah.
The person's telling them no about the second date, about hiring them, about recording them, about working with them. And that person's just hearing a bunch of compliments while the person is getting in their car and driving away.
Yeah.
They're hearing these compliments. And we all know the people that then they then happily roll them out to me, which is, I'm always the wrong guy to do that to. It's like, "Oh, the guy went to the showcase. He was a big fan. Told me how much he loved the Bob Dylan cover song I did. Big fan. Oh, did you sign with him?" "No, well, he only has room on his roster for 10. Like,
he's bringing it back to his executives. He's the president, but he's bringing it back to..."
Yeah. Right. And also, like, only room for 10 on his roster. "Oh, so if the 11th was Cat Stevens, he wouldn't make a little room for an 11th? You know, no, he's going a different direction and blah, blah, blah." And you're hearing because you're calibrated. Yeah. It's much more easy to be calibrated on other people's behalf.
Yeah.
You're hearing that date that didn't go well. You're hearing that job interview that didn't go well. You're hearing the audition didn't go well. So
they loved you. They think you were the best.
Right.
So they think you're perfect for the role. They can't imagine anyone else. So going a different direction.
Right. So everyone is super calibrated for everyone else. Get calibrated for yourself, too, please. Alan Zweibel is on. Alan? Hello. Test 1-2.
Hello.
Line 6. Good to speak to you, Alan.
Who's this, Adam?
Yes, this is Adam.
Hey, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. A Field Guide to the Jewish People. It's a book. It's available on Amazon as we speak. Oh, Dave Barry co-wrote this as well with you. Very.
As did Adam Mansbach. If you don't know people don't know his name. They know he wrote a children's book a few years ago that sold like a gazillion copies called Go to Fuck to Sleep.
Yeah, it's
very popular book.
Very popular.
Yeah.
I was just watching you on Curb Your Enthusiasm at the sushi place with Larry David and laughing because I love that show and I just love that scene of him kind of explaining.
Well, you know, I met Larry, God, in 1974. At the Improv in New York, and we've been best friends since. And I worked a couple of years on that show. Then I moved to New York. I took my family back east where we were from. And he called me when they were shooting in New York and said, "I got a character I think you can play." I said, "What?" And he said, "His name is Duckstein, and I don't want to have lunch with you." I said, "Fine." Well, and that's exactly what it was. It was like every phone call we've ever had in our lives.
It's a funny premise, which is, hey, we're in New York. We should get lunch while we're in New York. And Larry David is, we live in L.A. and we don't get lunch. Like, we both live there full time. And your character's like, "Yeah, but now we're in New York, so we should go out." And his thing is like, "Well, why should we go out if we don't when we live in the same town?"
Well, he's absolutely right. You know,
yes.
It's interesting. It's still that thing where, you know, I was in L.A. For the Emmys, and only there for about 36 hours was really whirlwind, because we start, this book came out today, and I start shooting a movie I wrote next week, and so it's been really hectic. So for the 36 hours that we were out there, we flew in, went to the Emmys, and came back. There were two people in L.A. who called and said, "I heard you were here. Why didn't you call when you were out here?" I said,
right.
"Listen, I speak to you all the time. I had no time to see you when I was out there, but still, you were in town. You should have called. We would have done nothing."
Yeah,
you know, so it's the same thing. I get it.
It's more preposterous to say, "Why didn't you at least call when you were physically 18 miles from my apartment versus 3,018 miles?"
That's exactly right.
The book, A Field Guide to the Jewish People. Tell me all about it.
Well, a couple of years, Dave Barry and I have been writing for a while together. We wrote a novel called Lunatics, and Adam Mansbach. And that book did very well. And then Adam Mansbach, I met him and wrote a couple of children's, young adult books with him. And I introduced him to Dave. And he grew up being a huge Dave Barry fan, because his dad was a newspaper man in Boston. And he grew up reading Dave Barry's columns all the time. So the three of us hit it off, and we decided to do something together. So a couple of years ago, we wrote a parody of the Passover Haggadah, and it was called "For This We Left Egypt," and it sold really well. And we wanted to write together something else, so we said, "Okay, let's expand it a little bit." So we wrote a field guide to the Jewish people, who they are, where to find them, what to feed them, you know. And it's originally the publisher wanted it to be called "How to Jew," and we said no. That sounds real bad, and my guess is that that's not going to work. And so we came up with a field guide to it, and it's a lot of fun. You know, if you go through the whole religion, all the rituals, all of the history, all of the symbols, and we teach you what they are and what it's all about. Obviously, we made up the whole thing.
I have a thought, which is Jews, they write a lot of comedy, they perform a lot of comedy, and they're in a lot of comedy. And you kind of go, all right, well, what, there's a motivating factor for everything. Like, you know, Jews used to do a lot of boxing in the 20s and the 30s, a lot of Jewish prize fighters with Star Davids on their shorts, and now they don't do it anymore because they don't have to, and the blacks and the Mexicans do it because they still have to. The groups that don't have to don't do it.
So it was passed on to the next oppressed group. Yeah.
Whoever's doing the worst, you guys fight, and we'll gamble. The rich people gamble on you. So it's kind of always been that way.
We don't have to fight anymore. That's right.
And then the sense of humor stuff is sort of like, well, okay, there's sort of this ongoing joke about Jews not being great athletes, and you know, in Airplane there was a pamphlet like greatest Jewish sports legends. It's, you know,
sure,
running joke. All right, fine, but you still want to get laid. You see where I'm heading here? Like, I don't know how much pussy Larry David would be pulling if he worked as a roofer or he drove a forklift. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think you're, I never thought of a roofer, but I think you're absolutely right. I think that there's a luster that guys have when they can make people laugh. You know, we're not really good on the trombone, you know, and
right,
we're not really good, let's say, when it comes to, guarding the net in
sure,
hockey.
Right.
But if we can get up there, either through our writing or stand-up or movies we make, and we can generate laughter, I think that there's an aphrodisiac there.
Right. So in a way, all right, I will, I'll do the opposite. I've always said my physically gifted friends, and I think we all understand this, the big dumb jock, the guy's just a physical beast. He looked like Gronkowski in the 11th grade, but that guy couldn't string thoughts and jokes and things there. Once in a blue moon, you meet some sort of whole package guy.
Yeah,
that's The Rock or somebody like that. But for the most part, those guys aren't great talkers, but they look great in their underpants. The Jews.
Oh, yeah, and they wear that black T-shirt, and it looks real nice. I get it.
the Jews may not be great on the gridiron, but they overcompensate, and maybe that's what's going on. I mean, maybe that's thus the physical prowess part that's a little bit lacking has probably been overcompensated for in the talking, joking, and writing department. And I don't know if 200 years ago, how much that worked, but today.
You have to talk your way out of a lot of pogroms.
Right.
Well, that's absolutely right. I think we learned to sprint during the pogroms, okay?
That's right.
Sprinting and maybe ducking and cowering, okay? But the sprinting part was good. And then you had a guy like, who was that guy? Marty Glickman, who made the Olympics. And he was a Jew in 1936, ran with Jesse Owens. But it's few and far between. I think that most of the athletic things that, prowess that we've had, I think it's been self-defense. I think we learned how to box because other people started beating us up. And we went, wait a second, I'm going to have to hit back sooner or later.
But this came out of situations. I'm saying it's paying dividends, literally, in the comedy world. You know, I don't know, like, you know, the biggest, most sturdiest built people on the planet? Samoans.
But also,
all right, close your eyes and think about all the great Samoan comedians over throughout the rock centuries.
You tell me their names. They'll tell me the next party that you hear the sentence, you know what we need to liven this place up? A couple of Samoans. I don't think you're going to hear that so fast.
No, you rarely hear it. So for you in this movie's coming out, or you're working on the movie.
We start shooting next week.
Yeah. You get hired on to SNL in what year?
1975. I was there from day one in 1975, and I left when Lorne did the first time in 1980.
Is Lorne Michaels? I've never met him. Should we regard him as a genius, as a comedic? Or sort of, I don't know, maybe higher regard than we do have for him. I mean, here that show's going on 50 years or 45 years or whatever it is. Like, it's so many stars, so many famous. What would the comedy world be without SNL? And is Lorne Michaels, how much credit should he get?
You know, Adam, it's true. You know, look, 45 years ago, he hired a bunch of us, and he just said, let's make each other laugh. And if we make each other laugh, we'll put it on television, and I have a pretty good idea that people are going to like it and tell their friends about it. And here we are 45 years later. He was on, he accepted that Emmy again the other night, and his genius is probably manifold. You know, one is like keeping that show on the air with every time you think that it's, you know, starting to list this way or that way. Well, you know, somebody, Kate McKinnon comes along. You know, Cicely Strong comes along. These people are real funny. I think part of his genius is his eye for talent. He finds, you know, just when you think, gee, there's no one left or whatever, look who's here now. And he's done that all. Plus, he's kept it all together.
I got to say, Kate McKinnon and Cicely Strong, I mean, they're powerhouses.
Yeah, Kate McKinnon's an all-timer. Like,
all-timer.
One of the all-time great women.
I think Kate McKinnon could have been in any cast in any era. I really do. I mean, I she makes me crazy, you know, when I watch what she does. Cicely is great also, you know. And I was watching, you know, was at the Emmys, you know, it was Fred Armisen. You look around, Seth, everybody came through there. You know, so many people came through there. And, you know, either by way of UCB or Groundlings or, you know, Second City, he finds them.
Brian is an aficionado of SNL, and he has a question.
I'm a huge fan of classic SNL. I always think of Lorne Michaels as the same kind of genius that Howard Stern is. Like, they're not the funniest guys in the room, but they know the formula. They figured it out for everyone else. They did their thing. They did something so incredibly unique, and it became the way to do it. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't an SNL. I mean, there was, you know, there was Second or National Lampoon, but it wasn't network TV SNL. There wasn't Howard Stern style morning show, and now that's the way it's done. It's like the archetype. Like, that's the genius.
Well, I think that that's a very good observation. But you know what's interesting? The 5 years that I was at SNL, now mind you, this was a million years ago. Lorne was really integral in the writing Okay, I don't know how it is now because, you know, I saw who got up there. You know, there was a whole legion of producers and everything. I think the buck still stops with him. And but back then, the he created a palette where the samurai could exist in the same 90 minutes with a soft piece about a girl slumber party. Do you know what I mean? And when we first, when he first started the show, and we said, "What is this?" I looked around the room. I saw Michael O'Donoghue, who founded the National Lampoon, Ann Beats, who was on the National Lampoon with him, Franken and Davis, who were a comedy team, a guy named Tom Schiller, who did documentaries, you know, Chevy, who had done very little TV, you know, Aykroyd and Belushi. And he said, "This will be a comedy variety show." But he went on to further explain that that means it will be a variety of different kinds of comedies. Mm-hmm. So what he had always had an eye for was different kinds of voices, different kinds of expression, even of the same things, you know, and somehow found a balance of it. And back then, he was real funny. You know, I see him a couple of times a year, and it's all fine, and he just did a really big favor for me and Billy Crystal for our movie. He helped secure a location for us that we really wanted, and he had influence at the Museum of Natural History, and he did a big favor for us. So, you know, it's all very pleasant, but, you know, I don't know what the day-to-day is at this point is what I'm saying, but I know what it was back then.
Yeah, I think in a weird way we file him under a sort of like a Dick Clark type character, like, oh, he's spinning the records, right, right, right. But he's not making the records, but he's famous, but he deserves much more credit than the guy who just pulled everyone in and is pulling the records. A Field Guide to the Jewish People, and it's available now on Amazon, and you can bookmark us and click through as well. It just helps. Alan, hey, when you get to L.A., let's not have lunch.
You know something? The next time I'm there, Adam, I promise I won't call you.
Thanks. Okay. Alan Zweibel, everybody. Thanks, man.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Sure thing. Yeah. Yeah, I never, it's funny, you know, you spend a lot of time thinking about, oh, Chris Farley was so funny, but you don't think about what's going on behind the scenes for all those years.
But you know what's
and
really,
who found Chris? Yeah.
But that's the thing. He has the magic finder. He has the magic picker. But Lorne doesn't come across funny. He doesn't appear in sketches. You don't see him crack up in public very often. He seems like a very serious dude, and he corrals the most amazing comedic talent on the planet.
Would we know the name Chris Farley if it wasn't for Lorne Michaels?
Do not know. Maybe not. All right. Gina has something. I have an interesting piece from my family, which is... So I interviewed for Take a Knee. You can download that. I don't know where you could just go to amcarolla.com and click that. I don't know.
Any podcast app, I'm sure.
I interviewed my brother-in-law, who my sister remarried, who was her boyfriend for when she ran away when she was 14 and a half.
Whoa.
And then had a little 37-year sabbatical.
Took a break.
And then then married him as a 50-year-old woman.
That's quite a love story.
It's an interesting story.
My God.
Yeah. So it's a kind of a crazy, and also, I also had this weird encounter, which is in the Take a Knee, which is I ran into him 10 years ago at a Pollo Loco in like Burbank. My sister's got three kids and is married to an architect, you know, and he like comes up and he goes, "Hey man, remember me?" And I'm like, "No." And he's like, "I'm your sister's old boyfriend," because they moved into my dad's house at some point because my family's a goddamn mess.
Well, because they're pretty tight.
Yeah. And he's like, "Hey, tell your sister I said hi." And I was like, "I'm not going to tell." my sister, their marriage, and their kids on her.
That's what the creepy guy says in the movie. Tell your sister to say hi.
Right.
It's a threat.
So,
tell your sister, I'll be seeing her.
It was a very interesting, he's a very nice guy, and it was a very interesting conversation. He was just a street kid, and my sister, because Dr. Drew always says, the only reason any girl ever runs away is when there's like sexual abuse, physical abuse, or like drug abuse, you know. Otherwise, nobody runs away. Right. I was like, there are other reasons.
Yeah. There's a fourth reason.
You don't know how bad my parents are. Like, you don't know how fucking bad their parenting was. And he's like,
could fall in the category of abuse, right?
He's like, yeah, but he's like, no one runs away. They run away from sexual abuse. Okay. Like, they run away because they're trying to get away from their stepdad comes into the room every night and they climb out the window. Right. Like, they don't come back. They don't, when you have a house over your head and running water,
you
end up just sort of hanging out. But, my parents are so bad, and my dad's such a neglectful dad, that my sister physically ran away at 14 and never really came back. At a certain point, came back only under the...
to get her jeans.
No, with the provision that she could just live in a garage and not go to school with her boyfriend.
Wow.
Who she met on the street.
Sure.
Progressive.
So, yeah. So I got
the
first.
And this is the boyfriend, and then they married. This is the boy, that, 37 that, years then later.
37 years. Damn. Yeah. I don't know. Some of this will be redundant, but I'll play you Ray, who's.
Do you feel like you got a little more insight about your sister at that time, who you did not live with because she ran away?
The insight is, if you are unlucky enough to grow up with my parents, if you're cursed enough to grow up with my parents, that's right. According to the male wiring, you can take it. You just leave all the time and wrestle with dudes and play sports and eat at other people's house and then sleep at their house and then wrestle with them again. You just get people in headlocks and ride your BMX bike and never come home. If you're a female, that wiring doesn't work for my parents because you need some attention, some focus, some something,
some support.
Yeah. Like something which they don't give. Oof. So I just hung out, but I didn't really hang out. I didn't hang out. I just went to Ray's house and ate dinner. My sister physically left.
What happened with the architect? They get divorced?
Yeah, they got divorced. And at some point, Ray circled back.
Swooped in.
He's waiting, biding his time.
Remember me?
I'll play you the first clip. This is the runaway clip. This is from Ray, who's, by the way, he has a country album.
Wow.
Yeah, yes.
R.W. Roldan is what he goes by. And you can check that out. I think you just Google it up, find it. He's a good country singer. All right, here's the first clip. You met my sister when you were both sort of runaway teens?
Yeah, we were on the streets as kids and met each other.
What year is that?
1977.
1977. You meet my sister. People listen to me know my sister ran away because, you know, my parents.
Yeah,
they're horrible.
Yeah, I do.
So they just, it's funny because Dr. Drew would always say the only time a kid runs away is when there's alcohol or abuse or sexual abuse or physical abuse. I go, none of that, none of that. And he goes, that's the only time somebody runs away. And I go, you haven't met my parents.
Yeah.
If you'd spent time with my parents, you'd run away too. So she meets you literally on the street.
Yeah.
So later on, they move. This house we lived in was my dad's A-frame in the valley with the dirt driveway. And it's like this $12,000 house. And there was a garage, but it wasn't really a garage. It was like some kind of structure that was off the side. No air, no water, no bathroom or anything.
Shed.
But she just let them live in the shed. And so then she moved home, but she didn't go to school. And then she just lived with her older boyfriend in the shed of my dad's junk house.
Permissive.
Yeah, well, that's...
You're saying there weren't a lot of rules in the household.
No, I could do whatever I wanted. The plan was, as long as you don't ask for money or anything else, food or anything else, you can go do whatever you want to do. It's a kind of a narcissism, I guess. But anyway, I'll play a clip about yes.
Before you do that, do you know how he ended up on the street?
Yeah.
You get into that, I imagine.
I did. He had a little more traditional route, some alcoholism and abuse and that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And dad died. Dad was a biker. Dad died on a Harley when he was young. You know, Eesh. Just all the stuff. All the stuff that ruins families. It was all there.
He was cleaning and had a heart attack.
Of course.
That's how he died on the Harley.
I'll play you living. So then they moved into my dad's garage. So you guys lived in this garage, but it wasn't even really a garage.
It was a loft above the garage. It was this little triangular-shaped loft that you climbed a ladder to get into. But that's where we lived at one point.
And Lauren was supposed to be in what grade at that point?
I think she was supposed to be in like ninth or tenth grade at that point. She was like 15 years old.
Jesus Christ. Yeah. My family's such a fucking mess.
That's basically like Natalia's preparing to bounce any month now. Can you imagine?
Boy. Man. But don't worry, her white privilege kicked in just a couple months later, man.
Back on top.
Then we have, I'll play the part where they reconnected after 30 years. So how then did you reconnect and then marry my sister after 37 years?
You know, I had met you and you said, oh, she's married to this guy, this architect, and they have three kids and they're in Topanga. So for years I was always doing work in Malibu and stuff, and I would drive through Topanga and think, I wonder if I'll see her sometime, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And one day I was looking on Facebook, and for years I had this picture of her. We had been in this picture booth when we were kids, and one of the pictures she was looking up to the right and kind of looking up, and her eyes are really pretty. You know, I just always remember that picture. But anyhow, she was going to a party and she had to be on Facebook to get the invitation. So she posted this picture of herself, which was like 37 years later, but the same picture,
mm-hmm.
looking up, you know, and she had taken this selfie. So I write to her. Now, you got to remember back in the day, I had long hair and I was kind of holy jeans, Mr. Artist. So the next thing she sees me, I'm wearing a cowboy hat and writing country music. And so she goes, what? Dot, dot, dot. And I didn't know what the hell dot, dot, dot meant. You know, so, oh, what does that mean? Like, you know. But anyhow, we started talking. And as she said, and I agree, time stopped when we started talking again.
Wow.
Crazy story.
Sweet.
Now, also, the reason I hate my parents is it's not... I wish they were alcoholic junkies. They were college educated. Yeah. They were educated, fucking normal educated people. That's that's the thing that makes it insidious. Like they
had
went
the means.
To school. They
the ability.
The ability. Like they could have been parents. they went places and went to college and had degrees and stuff. It's just God, when families are fucked up. Oh boy. Jesus, God.
Just give it 37 years. It'll work itself out.
Anyway, what a goddamn story. So anyway, I thought I'd share that with you. Let's see.
Can I show you something real fast?
Yeah. Lauren, let me tease it for one second. Let me hit ZipRecruiter. Hiring's a slow process. Cafe Alturas, C-O-D, Dylan Miskowitz. I think that's how you pronounce it, needed a director of coffee for his organic coffee company, but was having trouble finding qualified applicants. So he switched to ZipRecruiter. Its technology identified people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job. Dylan posted his job on ZipRecruiter, used their candidate rating feature to filter applicants so he could focus on the most relevant ones. Found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder that 4 out of 5 employers post on ZipRecruiter, get a quality candidate within the first day. It's ZipRecruiter, right, Dawson?
See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter.com/Adam. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Okay, Gina has something to share with us. Also, I lost my wallet. So that's harrowing. Oh. And we'll do all that right after this.
$25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and booze. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
Hey, folks, bad news. Month 5 of Adam's Monthly Nut with Mark Garagus's Mistrial is sold out. But you can still get a copy of his incredible book and the audiobook voiced by yours truly at Amazon.com. Be sure to click through us. And while I got Mark Garagus on your brain, make sure to subscribe to Reasonable Doubt to hear him and the Ace Man every week. Also, make it your mission to head to TBJGourmet.com to get more jars of the ambrosia that is bacon jam. Try it on burgers, breakfast, or anything else on the planet. The stuff was made by the gods, and they have every flavor you can imagine. So go. We'll get you set up next week for month 6 of Adam's Monthly Nut. But you can head to CorollaDrinks.com right now, and you can still get this month's shipment with Adam Carolla's Daddy Stop Talking. And now, Alcoa presents Definitely Not a Jew on the Adam Carolla Show. Dateline, Jacksonville, Florida. A 36-year-old man was arrested for felony aggravated battery when he stabbed a woman in the head with a fork. The man was upset that she had undercooked his baked potato. Definitely not a Jew.
So I was traveling and running all over the place, and in between, we all talked about the saga of going through the airports and in and out of cars and this and the other. And lo and behold, this morning started looking for my wallet, which is a money clip type wallet. And I got the backpack with the 115 pouches in it. So you have to unzip everything and run your hand through it. And then there's another pouch within the pouch. Sure. And you just keep running through the pouch.
At a certain point, when you get towards the end, you thought you've gone through every pouch. You got to kind of squeeze it. You're like, is it in here somewhere?
You turn upside down, you flap it around. And then at some point, you'll revisit that, that backpack. Yeah. Then I go, maybe it's in my jeans. So I go over through the jeans that I wore. Then I had a shirt, and the shirt had like some pockets with some Velcro and stuff. Like maybe it's a small clip. So it's like, yeah, it could be anywhere. Kind of retracing. Like,
a director or a fisherman.
Yeah. Like I went through the airport. I got through the airport. Let's see. So I'm like kind of retracing. Then I'm like, oh, now keep in mind, I came home at 3:30 in the morning. So I was way out of it. So I could have thrown it on top of a counter and you know, it's not my normal style, but I was so far, so sleep deprived and 10 hours of travel. So I start looking in the kitchen. Then I do the move where, wait a minute, I went out the next day. I got in the car. It could be anywhere under the seat of that car. And so it's that thing where you're lifting, by the way. You know you're the laziest person in the world when you're super aggravated, when you have electric seats and you're moving it all the way back. Oh, come on. Oh, come on. And then you start lifting it up so you can go around the back and look at it. Oh, God, this is taking forever.
Humanity.
Oh, the humanity.
What pain in the ass.
Oh, it's so hot in this four-car garage. Like, this is taking so long. So I do that. Then I get the flashlight. And I start feeling, because it's black carpet. And it's like a black little thing where the wallet is in, and I'm like feeling under there, and then it's the between the seat move. Now, then there's the go to the passenger seat. Maybe you threw it on the passenger seat and it slid off and fell. Go there. Oh, come on. Moving it all the way forward. Lifting it up, like tilting it forward. Going around the back. Then it's in the console. Then you start getting into the double back mode where you're like, I better check that backpack again. Go back to backpack, start flapping it around. Now it's like, oh, there's the sofa. Where I sort of threw everything, where I was taking everything out of the backpack, and it's got the other junks, got some notepads and some buck slips and a pen and stuff like that. Then it's like, could have easily slid behind the pillow and start taking the sofa apart. Then it's like, well, the shirt was in the hamper. Could have thrown it in the hamper, just fell out of the pocket. You know, it's again, it's like a money clip. Mm. So it's like there are no rules where it couldn't have slipped or slid to or slid in between, you know. Now it's like, take the hamper apart. Then it's like, okay, now go back down to the car, look in the car one more time, and then kind of follow your steps. Like, did you set it in the entry? Did you set it in the entry hallway? There's a little table there. Maybe it was in the drawer. Like, I'll go upstairs, look in the kitchen, look at the kitchen counters. So I'm like, I turn the whole house over. I turn the luggage over, and then I get the big. Then you start going super low percentage. Like, I didn't put it in my big carry-on bag, but I'm still going to tear apart.
Toiletry bag.
I got to take all the clothes that were in the bag and like shake them out.
Every pocket, everything.
Okay. Now you're getting into this grim reality, which is wallet gone. Mm-hmm. And you're like, damn. Okay, so maybe it's been like 48 hours. If I left it at the restaurant in Denver, they probably would have contacted somebody at the airport.
Or give it to your bank or in the credit card company.
Yeah, so then it's like, oh, God, I just got my driver's license. Damn, I just got my driver's license renewed, reissued. I just got it in the mail. Now, also, I'm turning on myself. Like, come on, Corolla, you're always talking about putting stuff in the same place. And I was like, yeah, but I'm so tired and I was traveling. And I was like, yeah, but then I was like, okay, you got through the airport. You must have used it to get from Kentucky to Denver. Then when you're in Denver, so maybe it's on a Frontier flight. But if it fell out of your pocket and it was on the ground of the Frontier flight, like on the floor of the plane, then who found it in the plane? And then we got
that goddamn raccoon on the tail.
Whatever, right. And so I called Matt. I'm like, Matt, bad news. You're gonna
go to Denver.
You're gonna have to retrace this whole business of Frontier. You got to contact them. You got to find the pizza place that we sat at in Denver. Then I don't know. Maybe it was in the security. Sometimes they give you that dog bowl and you put your sunglasses and your keys, but you leave your whatever. And Matt goes, "Oh yeah, no, they got your wallet." Oh. And I'm like, "They do? Oh yeah, I got an email the other day.
Oh
no."
Like, I was with you the entire day.
That's probably worth mentioning.
Entire day. News. That's the kind of thing you'd want to push ahead.
I know Matt does a lot. He's got a lot on his plate, but the lost wallet, that's top priority.
I'd say. But I don't know. When did the email? Now, it said the RV, right?
That's correct.
Right. So here's.
I said Matt's got a lot on his plate. He's not doing a lot. He's got a lot on his plate.
Here's my part of it, and it's the rhythm. It's the rhythm part. So what happens is I'm shooting throughout Kentucky for days. Nate, because he's a pro, has hired an RV.
Okay.
It's not a big RV. It's a smallish RV, but it's an RV. And it's following us around to every different location, whatever. And it's damn hot and humid in Kentucky. But he got an RV, and the RV is running, and they run the air.
Good.
And in
always
between
thinking.
Setups, you can go in there. And Mike August can watch a little college football with spotty reception.
It's something.
And I had taken to taking my phone and like my earbuds and other personal artifacts and leaving them in the RV. And the RV would follow us around. And then when we were done with the day's shoot, I'd go into the RV, collect all my stuff. But we ended up at the Bourbon and Beyond Festival, and we could only get passes for like two cars to get to the backstage ZZ Top area. RV not permitted.
Oh.
But doesn't matter. They had a whole air-conditioned room with whatever, like a camper thing back there where the bands could hang out, whatever. So we ended up back there with all the stuff. And then when it came time to go to the airport, Nate was like, I'll drive you guys to the airport. And we just jumped in the rental car and took off. So there wasn't the RV. And I never went by the RV for the last sweep. But
so how did you get through security?
I had my passport with me because I had been traveling with my passport.
Smart.
And when I was leaving LA, I think Mike commented like, well, you don't need your passport anymore. And I said, this license I just got in the mail like 2 days ago. I don't fully trust it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to throw my passport in as well. And then when I got to the airport, as I now think back on it, I unzipped my thing, looked in the pouch, and was like, where is my, oh, I'll just use, you know, here, you look at this. And I moved on. When did you get the email, Matt?
Well, before I answer that, let me again just say how insanely sorry I am. And I know how stressful it is to lose something valuable, and I know how valuable your time is. So again, my
I only tore apart my sofa
apologies.
Twice and blamed myself the entire time.
But window of negligence.
Yeah,
that's a fine usage of the drop. Thank you, Brian. Having said all that, it came in 9:15 yesterday morning. I blew it. I just blew it.
And we spent the
I always I flag the emails, I write it down, and for some reason neither thing happened.
Not
usually
to
double check it.
Kind of fair to everybody, I probably should have been included on that first email, right? Like, I get they went like, hey, assistant, we got your boss's
wallet. Oh, yeah,
who emailed you?
Who emailed you?
I don't like to throw other employees, let alone people I work for, under the bus, Brian.
Oh, I'm just trying to put together.
Was it Nate?
Oh, wait. Who found the wallet?
Coincidentally, Mike August on line 6.
Oh.
All right. Wait, who found it? Where'd you get that
Mike
email?
August.
I thought that
Mike
Eric?
August?
August
oh, okay.
emailed me. He was emailed by this other guy.
Oh,
I thought some venue or some airport or something.
The other guy probably could have included me and
Travis.
Mike probably could have included me as well.
I don't want anyone other than me taking responsibility for this.
Yeah, but it's true. And I left it in the RV, so I take responsibility as well. But goddamn, I tore my house apart today. All right, Mike August.
Capital One just called. You're in for the campaign, but not anymore. Gotta have a wallet.
What's in your wallet? What's in my wallet? No, I'm literally asking you, what's in my wallet?
Mike, you know I'm a comedian, right? Mike
Sometimes.
Is here to defend his airport etiquette. Now,
oh no, not my etiquette.
I know.
I'm
just
my joking.
I know.
I told that guy.
I know, because it was said that Mike told the guy to go get a tattoo. It seemed out of context for me because I was looking at a guy with short sleeves and
visibly
no tattoos. But Mike, you're here to first recreate the situation that happened at 12:22 in Denver on Sunday night.
The ugliness after 3 hour layover, we show up. Board the plane finally. It's like, you know, 15 minutes before the plane leaves. And there's two sets of lines. There's like a line going to the left all the way down, which I guess we figured out were the zone one folks. And then there was everybody else. And so we're just walking. I'm going, oh man, if we got to get to the end of this line, our bags are not going to be anywhere near us when we get out in LA. What are we going to do? We're just literally just waiting maybe to talk to somebody. And as we're just waiting there at the top of the line, this dude, you know, basically says, hey, those gentlemen, back of the line's over there, right? Which, you know, it's the last thing I want to hear. And I had seen this guy, I don't know how I'd seen him earlier, but he had like a sleeve of tattoos inside his right arm. Really bad tattooing. Like, this guy's like in his late 50s. It's like 30-year-old tattoos. They're all disjointed and weird. So I'm like, hey, you know what? You don't know what we're doing. Don't accuse us. Mind your own business, is what I told him. And he wouldn't stop. So I finally just said to him, why don't you just go sleeve your other arm? Get another tattoo. And he shut right up, right? That was the best part. That was it. He was done. No, don't reference my tattoos. That's my kryptonite. You got me.
Okay. So I'm sitting there looking at the guy. I see no tattoos on him.
Right.
So I just hear Mike going, go get another tattoo. Go sleeve your arm.
Well, the first set worked out so well. Spend your time doing something constructive.
But you spotted his tattoos before he was in line, like somewhere else, right?
You also didn't reference that I took another shot at him. So we waited out. So, of course, they finally start loading the zone one guys to our left. The line starts moving in. As soon as they do it, a bunch of people on the other side just jam into the zone one line. And I don't know if they're zone one or zone none, but they're now going in front of us and cutting in front of this guy. right? They're like zipping right. in, and I'm yelling at him, hey, hey, you going to police this or what? Come on, because you're getting on the plane. He didn't even turn around. Jerk.
Yeah. Mike.
Just us. Just us.
Remember when you fought that guy on the freeway off-ramp?
That's my favorite
Every day
story.
I think about that.
Do you ever figure out if he was homeless or just crazy and walking the freeway off-ramp?
Aren't they all just crazy and homeless at the same time? Mm. It's not mutually exclusive.
Remember the
if
time
you're
that,
crazy, you're homeless.
That
if
time,
you're homeless, you're crazy.
That time that guy sideswiped you and then took off and you followed him in your car and pulled him out of his car and got him in a headlock?
I was named Citizen of the Month for that caper.
Were you?
No, Jimmy faked me out. Remember?
Oh yeah, Jimmy cooked up a fake city council thing.
You can go online to this day. There's a YouTube video of me in Jimmy's office. It's well over like 30,000 views now of Jimmy literally setting me up on the Citizen of the Year in Burbank. I got sideswiped by a drunk driver. I pulled him over. I called the cops. I held him down. The cops came, and then I get a letter from the Burbank mayor's office saying, "Hey, for your brave actions, we're going to give you a Citizen of the Month award. Show up at the mayor's office on Tuesday to get your award." And I'm like, oh, okay, great. And it was a letter with the seal of the Burbank mayor on it and everything. And then it was supposed to be a week later that I'm supposed to show up. And so like on Friday, I hadn't heard anything about specifics. What do you do? What time? What do you wear? Is there photos? So I call the number on the letterhead, which was Jimmy's son. Kevin's cell phone. When they faked the letter, they also faked the phone number, and Kevin was supposed to realize that I'd be calling and was supposed to answer Burbank mayor's office. But he got caught off guard and just said hello, and I knew his voice. Right? So then he calls Jimmy and goes, "It's over. He got me. I screwed up." So Jimmy was going to be there with a camera crew to watch me get embarrassed because there would be no Burbank mayor award, but it all got
bungled.
Taken down by the phone.
Yeah, I remember being in Jimmy's office when we were talking about it. And it was all so good. It was perfect. And for me, it would have worked perfectly because I had another friend of mine get Santa Monica City Citizen of the Year for thwarting a rape, holding a guy in a headlock. Like, it made sense.
Yeah, it did make sense to me. I thought, okay, yeah, it's what we do, right?
Yeah, not in Burbank, not anymore.
It's so crazy.
Actually, the cops told me when I did it, like, you were crazy to do that. You don't know who this guy is. He could be a gangbanger. He could have called other gangbangers. You should never do this.
That's what you
don't know me very well.
That's the thing. Brian, you've known Mike August for a lot of years. I get it, and I can wrap my head around it, and I know that this story is true. But can you see him, like, losing his cool and, like, beating the shit out of somebody? You're so nice, Mike.
Yeah.
Except when my flip gets switched. I'm very nice until I reach that threshold and you flip it. I'm not nice anymore.
I gotta see that.
I get really angry.
Yeah, he's
particularly when it's uncalled for. Uncalled for stuff really makes, like, that guy the other night was so uncalled for.
Well,
he did that for himself, you know.
It's if you ever hear Swayze's stirring speech in Roadhouse, where he explains to everyone, "Be nice,
be polite,
be nice, be nice until it's time to not be nice."
Right.
That's
right.
That's the words that drive Mike August. All right, Mike, I'll see you on the road.
I live by.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Hey, okay. Mike, he's talking about you. You fuck ass.
Mike August fighting people on the street.
That's great. So great.
And by the way, don't mistake Mike's sort of frontier justice with being angry or even mean or scary.
No, he's a low resting pulse.
I have the exact same mentality he has for many, many years of playing football. Like, physical confrontation does not bother you. If you play football your entire life, you don't mind wrestling with guys. That's kind of what you do, what you did. And Mike thing is sort of like, you punch my car, then I'm going to get out of the car and punch you. But it's not personal. Yeah, it's not an anger. It's like, most every fight I got into was not anger-based. It was just that's what we're going to do now because of this situation. And Mike doesn't really raise his voice. He just tells him to shut up or he gets out of his car and gets him in a headlock.
I'm thinking of the clip we played. Remember when there was that weird incident where the guy in Napa with the gun and he killed the guy and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, that's right.
We had August talking to him on the phone and he was not happy. His voice was raised. Remember the secret recording of August, you know, on the phone?
Yeah, Mike was calling the guy a thief.
A liar.
And a liar. All right, Gina has something
just in a little good news
purse. First, let me hit Castrol Ledge. You can tweet us at Adam Carolla Show with the hashtag Castrol Challenge with your questions for Castrol Challenge, brought to you by Castrol Ledge, formulated with fluid titanium technology, reduces friction, maximizes engine performance, three times stronger.
Three times, fool.
And leading full synthetics. You got a question, Max Pata?
Yes, I do. Sean on Twitter wants to know, hashtag Castrol Challenge, what are your thoughts on start-stop ignitions? Just bought a new VW gas-powered engine. Takes some getting used to.
Yeah, I did a lot on this on CarCast this week. It turns out it saves a lot of fuel. It doesn't. I wish it didn't. It drives me nuts. I've disengaged mine in my car just by pulling you can pull a fuse and figure it out.
Does that mean when you're stopped, the engine stops?
Yes. And then it starts, and then it stops. And they haven't quite really worked it out. Probably some cars better than others. but it affects, like, if you have a radar detector, mm-hmm. it'll kick off and then back on and stuff like that. It's kind of a pain in the ass. And for people like me that have plenty of money but not so much time, I'd rather just waste the X amount of gas a year and just have it run while I'm sitting at the stoplight mm-hmm. with all the electronics on and the radar detector and so on and so forth. We looked it up. It saves about 10%, although that sounds like too much, but that's what they say. And it adds up. You can disengage it with a button that's in the car on most cars, but then the next time you get in the car, it just reengages again. The button doesn't sort of hold, mm-hmm. so to speak. So if you pull the fuse on it, that'll work as well. All right.
Mine has a deactivation button, like a toggle button. You know what I mean? It goes on and off.
But stays off?
Yeah. It'll reset every time you turn the car off.
But yeah,
every
that's time what I'm saying.
Oh.
Yeah. You shut it off, but then it starts again when you get in the car.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You make that choice every time.
Right.
You have to do it every time.
It's an opt-in, yeah, every time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good if you're going to be, but most of the time you're in your car, it's like less than half an hour, mm-hmm. and then you get in your car, you go to the Trader Joe's, you get back on, it's on again. You know what I mean? So I wish it was a toggle, in which case you could just like flip it and lock it and leave it. But now you got to grab for the fuse. What do you got in your purse, Gina Gray?
Well, just a little something. I did hear rumor when I said I was going to do this that there were some naysayers that said I wasn't, that I wouldn't do it, I wouldn't be able to do it. And it was just, I'm a little sentimental. And we had a harrowing experience through the airport, and everything took longer and was more miserable than it should have been. But because I really, really loved it, and she worked so hard,
our
I did bring
gal.
Back in one piece, as best as I could.
The piece is falling out
cake
of it.
Is topper.
Yeah, that's still most of us.
That's as best as I could do. And I think you just lost your W amputee now, Adam.
That's fine. It's amazing, Gina. We'll take a picture.
Great.
We'll make sure we take a nice.
I hand carried that back from Kentucky.
Color picture of that, and we'll post it up at AdamCarolla.com. And thank you, Gina Graham.
Of course. Thank
you for being thoughtful. All right. Let's see. We have a. We got news. I got an unprepared clip about 3 minutes long. Where's this from? Portland?
Yep, this is Portland.
Play that. I'll tell you guys tonight, 10:30 Comedy Central after South Park, you can watch the new Crank Yankers. I guess me and Aubrey Plaza and Tracy Morgan are going to be on tonight, as far as we know, Max Pata.
That's what they're all saying.
Who's Aubrey Plaza? Do I
from
know
Parks
her?
And Rec, of
Parks
course.
And Rec, yeah.
She's very recognizable.
Very dry humor, big eyes, pretty girl.
Funny people.
Oh, okay. Oh, yes, yes. Know her now. Now I know her. Yes, know her well. All right. It's officially too many ensemble casts now. All right. I'll play a clip from Crank Yankers.
No.
Sorry. From Portland. Unprepared.
So I was going to say I'm a single gal, and this is...
You're right, single. Yeah.
Right up my alley. The word is vibrators.
Vibrators. Vibrators. Yeah. So a tip to the fellas. Like, if the fellas ever want to fucking bust out the vibrator with the lady, do not announce it at brunch. It doesn't work. Like, do not be sitting at the old spaghetti factory and fucking put it on the table. Tonight, when you're done with that Bloody Mary, oh, man, I'm going to work you like a sock puppet with this fucking bad boy.
don't do that. Don't have a discussion about it. Don't pontificate. Don't get anything in writing. You want to use that vibrator on your lady, you got to fucking hide it. You got to put it between the mattress and the box spring. Don't say shit. Get a few drinks in her. Get a little busy. And at some point, pop that thing out and fire it up. And don't use the Duracell. She'll fucking lose a filling. You got to go with the lower grade battery. She'll be stuttering for a month. I like the remote ones. I like the idea that the folks can control it from like, but it'd be a little confusing. Like you're sitting there. I don't know. What do? You give it to your man, like give the remote to your man and he gets drunk and he's like, why isn't the garage door opening? Fucking wife's upstairs sitting in a pool of her own shit. Fucking spill their wine cooler all over herself. She's like, I'm watching Locked Up Abroad and I'm coming at the same time. What's going on? He's like, fuck this garage door. Do you name your vibrator?
No.
No, you don't name it? Guys name their
vibrators.
Dick.
Vibrators.
Yeah. Your collection.
I gotta switch it up.
Oh, I like that. You have more than one.
Yes, I do, and I don't want to get them confused, so I just they're no.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Now, what do? You just have one of those glass containers the barber has with the blue liquid in it, just sitting on your nightstand, and you're like,
No, it's the top drawer.
What day
my
is
dresser.
It? Top drawer.
Yeah, I don't want to give away too much info because my brother's here. Today.
Oh, now that's.
But yeah, it's that. Yeah.
That's weird.
You stash those in.
Yeah, there's two things. Never look for shit in a woman's room because you will find that that cache of vibrators. I don't know what's protocol. Like I know, I'm not a gun guy, but if you go out and use a gun, you have to clean it and oil it and fucking break it down and put it back. What's the vibrator move? Just one quick slide under the arm and.
Yeah, what is protocol, Gina?
Make sure it's dishwasher safe.
Oh, really?
Oh, silicone, yeah. Non-porous.
I remember when Ron Jeremy gave me his dick in silicone.
That's a friend.
And I was like, what do I need this for? And then I thought, well, I can't throw it away. It's like $60 worth of silicone. And, you know, I like Ron. So I was like,
make a lot of specials.
I was like, well, it's like rolling around in my car. So I just like brought it upstairs.
It's for the best.
And at some point I put it like in my closet and put it on a shelf. And at some point after the cleaning lady was there, it was moved to a different location. I was like, okay.
It's a sign. Yeah.
Also, you know that thing where you go like, do I need to sit down and sort of explain this or should we both just pretend this didn't happen? Oh, she's telling her friends in Spanish what a fucking pig I am, right? But like,
yeah, you're pervert.
It's weird. And her? She has no context.
No.
No context. Like, here's a massive, I'm sure she just thinks it's been in his ass the entire time.
Why so grande?
Yeah. Like, she doesn't know it's Ron Jeremy. She doesn't know any
of it. You don't understand. It's Ron Jeremy.
There's nothing.
That wouldn't help.
I can't explain that.
No.
Gina, turn that towards Adam. Why did the cake topper make you Lieutenant Dan?
Extremities don't travel well on a plane. You are a double amputee and I lost my arms.
All right. Let's see. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do the news right after this.